Kia ora. Welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 313. Today is Friday, December 18, 2015. Jeez, that's a lot of teens. It's Friday, which is the day one of the days I always used to podcast back in the day. It's actually the day I'm still most likely to podcast, if indeed I do podcast, which these days is an open question because I so seldom do. But it is still the most likely day, and here I am, as if to prove the point. Well, this episode, I've got some updates on the last episode, because some of the things I talked about have come to resolution, and which is ironic, because that episode was an update on earlier ones, but hey, this is the way things work. First and foremost, we have a winner of the flag referendum, or the first flag referendum, I should say, and it was not entirely what I expected. The winning design was one of the two Kyle Lockwood designs, which is what I thought would happen, but it was the Silver Fern black, white, and blue, not the Silver Fern red, white, and blue, which was my first preference, and the one I thought might win. It was actually the one with the black, which is also the one that Prime Minister John Key preferred. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. Probably not. But it was a little bit of a surprise, partly in that for the first two rounds of the preferential system, because remember how it works, the lowest vote, if none of the designs get 50%, the lowest voting one, it drops off, and then they go to the second preference for those voters, and they're redistributed and so on, and they keep going until one of the flags has at least 50% of the vote. And in the first round, the red, white, and blue one was winning, and in the second, and it was only in the third round that the Silver Fern black, white, and blue pulled ahead by 5,000 votes, and then in the fourth round, it finally won. And so this has created some confusion. People can't quite understand how the second choice ended up being the winner. And as a matter of fact, I put a link in the show notes to an article that talked about that. And it's got to do with the vagaries of preferential voting systems, which a lot of people don't understand. And I think one of the easiest ways to understand the whole process is that the way that we normally vote for, say, a state representative or a member of Congress is whoever gets the most votes wins. It's called first past the post. And that could mean that they have, if there's a lot of candidates in a district, say, the winning person might only have 30% of the votes because all the rest is split among all the other candidates. And that's hardly democratic to have a minority choosing who is going to be the elected representative. Well, in a preferential system like this, what happens is that the votes are redistributed so that the final winner has a majority of the vote, 50% or more of the vote. So what that is instead of just majority rules and no matter what the percentage is, they win, it's more of a consensus approach to deciding these things. It's like you get into a room, everybody says, oh, I want this, I want that, I want the other thing, and then eventually, well, okay, you start eliminating, okay, I'm not really happy with that, but I'll go with this one. And eventually you end up with the majority of people being happy with the winner. And the advantage of it is that whatever emerges, in this case a flag design, but it could be a representative of some sort, whatever wins has support of a majority of the voters. You cannot have a minority supported, you can't have somebody winning with a minority of the vote. And that's its strength. It's also the fact that somebody with a minority of the vote can win is one of the greatest weaknesses of first past the post. It's inherently anti-democratic and unfair, whereas preferential voting, it addresses some of that, at least. It fixes a lot of it. There are issues with it, structural issues that are probably too complicated to go into now. And there's a lot of good things about it on the web. CGP Gray on YouTube, that's Gray with an E, and CGP Gray is all one word, has videos on various voting systems, and I think he does a really good job of explaining how the various systems work, and so you can better understand the strengths and weaknesses of each one. But, so there was a lot of confusion about how we got the flag we got, but we did, and I'm okay with it, because it was my second choice. My first choice was, and I didn't say this last time, my first choice was Silver Fern, red, white, and blue, and my second choice was Silver Fern, black, white, and blue, and the others I ranked much lower. And, in fact, I blogged about that as well, and I'll make sure I put the link to my two two posts on the results, the preliminary and the final, because they both talk about slightly different things. But for those who don't read blogs, which is probably most people, the final voter turnout was 48.78%, which is, it's in the averages for these sort of postal ballot referenda. And there was a little bit of, I don't know what to call it, not sour grapes exactly, but negativity after the referendum, because people were saying that it was a tiny percentage of the eligible voters, and that's probably true. And I don't know if tiny is quite fair, but a small amount of the eligible voters, and that's because there are always more eligible voters than there are enrolled voters, or registered, we used to call them in the U.S. And that's always been the case, except at the triennial nationwide elections. Every 3 years, we elect parliament who forms government, and voter registration is always at its highest in those years and drops off afterwards, and it doesn't recover until the next parliamentary elections. And it's always been that way. But I, too, have sometimes referred to the percent of eligible voters as opposed to enrolled voters. Although in my case, it was because, it's a long story and I'll shorten it, there were radical right conservatives who, radical right, I suppose radical left conservatives? Anyway, radical conservatives who were saying something that was blatantly untrue. They were saying that a vast majority of New Zealanders had voted in favor of a thing when, in fact, a vast majority of New Zealanders had not done any such thing. A vast majority of enrolled voters had done that thing, but not even a majority of New Zealanders had voted. So anyway, at times like that, it makes sense. But for something like this, it really doesn't. It's splitting hairs to talk about enrolled voters versus eligible voters, because people could have registered if they really cared and wanted to have a say, and they didn't. So they sort of took themselves out of the discussion, and they ceded it to other people to have the discussion on their behalf, which is what happened. And so 48.78% of people enrolled to vote actually cast ballots, which is low by New Zealand standards, but as I said, it's fairly common. I mean, low by New Zealand standards for normal elections, but for a postal ballot, it's kind of in the mid-range. And I talked about that on my blog, too. However, there were a very high percentage of informal votes, 9.68%, which is down a little bit from the preliminary results. Now, informal votes, you may recall, are whenever they can't determine somebody's first preference, because that's all that really matters. Well, not all that matters, but the thing that makes a vote valid is if they can tell what your first preference is. You don't have to vote for any of the others. As long as you put a number one in one of them, they'll count it. But a lot of people put all X's, or they scratched it out and defaced it, or did something to make it impossible for them to determine what the first preference was, and then it became an informal vote. The problem is that we can assume, I think fairly safely, that most of those informal votes were cast by people who were pissed off about something, but we just don't know what, because they might have hated John Key, they might have hated the process, they might have hated just the five designs, they might have been adamant about keeping the current flag. We don't know, because there's no way of knowing what their motivation was. If it was one of those factors, or all of those factors, or something else, we can't know that. For the same reason, we can't know why people didn't vote. Some of them, no doubt, boycotted the referendum because, for whatever reason, you know, it could be one of those reasons or another. But we can't know that either. No polling is done on this sort of thing. So we just cannot know why people didn't vote or why they cast an informal vote. And we never will know. But as I said, we can surmise they were probably pissed off about something. So voter enrollment is open again. And the next referendum, I think, is in March. And that will pit the silver fern black, white, and blue against the current New Zealand flag. And I intend on voting for change, as do most people that I know. Not everyone, certainly, because some people just hate that design and they're determined to vote. They'll either skip the election or they'll vote for the current flag in the hopes that we get something better, in quote marks, down the road. But, you know, to each their own. When I talked about it on Facebook, I never said before the referendum what my preference was. Well, actually, I did when the first four designs were released. But But I never talked about it again, and certainly not regularly as other people did, especially the fans of Red Peak. I just didn't talk about it for a lot of reasons. And now that the vote is over, I'm more than happy to say how I voted. And making my intentions clear for the next referendum, because no point not to. And I'll state my reasons. But in this, as in so many other cases, I don't really care how people vote, as long as they do vote, as long as they have their say. If they really don't care about, you know, they can't make a choice between the two flags, that might be a valid reason not to vote or to spoil the ballot or whatever. But I just think that people, it's important that people vote and have their say regardless of how they vote. And I've always felt that way, even when people vote in ways that I don't approve of, like voting for Republicans or the people in the National Party or ACT Party or whatever. It doesn't matter. They should exercise their right to vote because it is the right thing to do. And that ends my speech for today. But speaking of speech, actually, last time I talked about how Prime Minister John Key had said that Labour was supporting rapists and child molesters by standing up for the Kiwis who were being held in the Australian Christmas Island Detention Centre. He has since apologized. I know, I didn't see that coming either. But it was the last sitting day of Parliament before they broke for the summer, and he did apologize. And I'll put links to that in the show notes. I presume it was sincere. I don't know. He wasn't really inclined to back down or apologize, but maybe he thought it would be good PR just before Christmas to do it. I don't know. For their part, Labour also apologized because some of their MPs had publicly criticized the Speaker, which is not permitted, and the Speaker of Parliament, and said that he was biased, even though he is. And so they apologized for that as well. So it's all, you know, sweetness and light and hugs and sugar canes dancing. I don't know. But the thing is that it did resolve that anyway, so it doesn't carry on into the new year. And as it happens, though, it didn't make any difference. One of the major national pollsters is called Rory Morgan, and they released their latest results earlier this week, I think it was. And either that or late last week, I can't remember which. At any rate, I'll put a link in the show notes, but they called theirs National Set for Happy Christmas as Key Government Retains Strong Lead Over Labour Greens Opposition. Now, Rory Morgan Research is in my opinion, they do credible polls. They are generally fairly good, reasonably accurate, sometimes better than other times. But the press releases they put out are often very strongly slanted towards the National Party. And I don't know if that's on purpose or if they have a bias or what the story is. But I've detected that for a very long time now. Be that as it may, what their poll results show is that basically there was no change. That National is still ahead of the Labour Greens potential coalition. And at the moment, they're actually polling higher than they did on election night back in 2014, September 2014. But the opposition parties are also polling higher than they did in September of 2014. So make of that what you will. It doesn't really tell us that much, except that the controversy over John Key and his rapist and child molesters comment didn't affect the government at all, which is what I was saying last time, and I didn't actually think it would. And it is certainly now over, that story. But, yes. But as I said, the Parliament is now in summer hiatus, and there have been years in the past when I've commented and said, what would we have to do to make sure they never come back? Because it's so much more peaceful when they're not in session. There aren't these arguments and these sillinesses carrying on. So it's much more peaceful. Except there's one new story to add to this twist. I can't remember if I talked about it, and I can't be bothered to go back and look to find out. But I know I talked about a book called Dirty Politics, which laid out the collusion between the Prime Minister's office, The National Party attack blogger named Whale Oil, or called Whale Oil, his real name is Cameron Slater, and one of the ministers named Judith Collins, who is a real nasty piece of work. Well, the police raided the author of the house of the author of the book, Nikki Hager, and they confiscated computers and electronic devices and so on. Well, the court has just ruled that that search was illegal, which everybody knew at the time. But the allegation has been made that the police did it based on political motivation, not necessarily theirs, but that they got either direction from John Key's government or they read the signals and acted on behalf of John Key's government. It's unclear. But their search and seizure of Nikki Hager's electronic equipment was illegal, as everybody knew. And it's not the first time that they've been accused of political interference and political, what's the word I'm looking for? Motivation, I guess. And we'll see what comes of it. It's coming before, just before Christmas, you know, like a week out from Christmas. I don't think it's going to end up, you know, I don't think this story is going to have legs. I was right about the thing about the, about John Key's remarks, only because I know how the New Zealand public works now, and that sort of thing just never catches on. If this story broke when Parliament was in session or had just risen, then it might have gotten somewhere. But coming right before the holidays, I could be wrong, but I just don't see how it's going to be sustained over the summer, because people aren't going to be paying any attention to anything political or probably even in the news. And so it will only be, and it reinforces the attitudes of people who already despise John Key. I don't think it's going to make his fans suddenly turn on him, because nothing he does ever does that. So I don't know. I think that this is a serious matter. Somebody needs to investigate the police in this whole situation to find out if they are acting based on political motivations, either their own or that of, or political interference from the government, which is also possible. But I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. And I think this is going to continue on for the next year anyway. Our next elections aren't until 2017. So I think most of 2016 is going to be similar things like this that will come out. The opposition will try to make it stick to John Key, and it won't. Now, whether or not he's going to win the next election is still an open question, because for one thing, they've had 3 terms in government, and New Zealand voters usually get sick of a government after 3 terms. So they may get booted out just because of fatigue, or it could be that people may finally start turning on John Key. But I wouldn't hold my breath. Meanwhile, we've had some trying times around here. I think I've said this before, we have LPG gas for our hot water and our stovetop. LPG in the U.S. is usually called propane. And we have 2 45-kilogram cylinders, I believe they are. And they're serviced. They have this tilt plate, which drop, they're supposed to drop when the gas gets low so that you can reorder, and they come and bring new bottles and give you credit for anything left in the cylinders, I might add. Well, we ran out of gas, which doesn't happen very often. It's because the tilt plate got stuck and didn't drop. And so I ordered the gas. You can actually hook up a normal barbecue bottle to your system so you can run the hot water and stove and stuff like that. And so we did that. So we could have hot showers. That was good. But they wouldn't deliver the gas because they said our pigtails were cracked. Now, I had never heard of this phrase. I didn't know what they were talking about. And it turns out that it's the hoses that connect the cylinders to the regulator, which then spreads it out over to the system, to the hot water heater and the stovetop and so on. And our oven is electric, by the way. Not that it matters. It just is. And so that we were supposed to arrange for a gas fitter to come out and replace them, and that was that. Because apparently that's our property. Well, I don't know. You know, they were there when we moved in. So they could be up to about, they have to be more than 10 years old. How much older, I don't know. Could be up to 4 years older than that. I don't know. But they're rubber, and they were cracked. And they weren't exaggerating. But that doesn't mean that they're about to burst or anything, but it does mean they're weak. The pressure isn't high, but it's high enough that it could be a problem. So we got that scene too. But then I had booked a gas fitter that we decided not to use in the end because I got it sorted sooner. So I had to cancel that, and I had to reorder the gas. And they only deliver in our area twice a week. One of them is Monday, which means we'd be without gas for the entire weekend. But we have a larger gas bottle than normal. I mean, most gas bottles hold 9 kilograms for barbecues. They hold 9 kilograms of LPG. Well, we actually, several years, when we moved in the house, we kept running out of gas because at that time we had gas forced air heat, which is really, really weird in New Zealand, really unusual. And so we got this larger than ordinary bottle so that when we did run out, we would have a backup until the next gas delivery, which in those days was actually more frequent than it is now. I think they did 3 times a week. And so we had, fortunately, we had this big bottle, but this bottle, in New Zealand, a bottle has to be inspected every 10 years. And to have it inspected, you take it to a dive shop and they'll do a pressure test. And if it passes the test, then it can go for some more years. I don't know how many, because I don't know anybody who's ever actually done that. It's usually, I think it's cheaper just to buy a new bottle and fill it than that. But we have 3 bottles currently that are past their test date, and so they're of no use to us. So we have to take them to a special place for disposal, and they're not around very often, so we keep forgetting. So we've got 3 bottles, and this big one I was talking about is only good until February of next year. But we thought we might as well get our use out of it now before we can't refill it anymore. So we're doing that, but as it happens, they have since approved a even bigger bottle than this one. And because anything larger than that, you have to have a permit for, or it has to be, you can't privately own it. It has to be owned by somebody else. I don't know. There are regulations about these things. So we ran out of gas. And while that's going on, we've been fighting for months to get our dryer repaired. We bought our dryer sometime back. I can't remember when. And in August, it broke down. It has electronics that drive it, as so many things do these days, and it stopped running. And so we've been trying to get them to fix it for at least 4 months, because I know for sure it happened in August. I referred to it very obliquely on my blog, and nothing was happening. Well, finally, they were ready to go, and they were going to come yesterday morning at, I think it was 11. Well, I had an appointment to go do something at 10, so I had to cancel that. Because, you know, we're waiting 4 months for a dryer, and I'm not about to risk having to risk another 4 months. So off I go. So I cancel that, and I reschedule that meeting for 2:30. And it gets to be about 20 to 2, and they still haven't shown up yet. So I'm thinking I'm going to have to cancel again. And so Nigel's actually dealing with them, and he found out, oh, no, they'll be here between 9:30 and 10 this morning. And so I was able to put the meeting back on, rushed to my meeting at 2:30. It was a little bit late, which was fine. It all worked out. But I had another errand I was supposed to run. I had to do it by 3 o'clock, and it was too late by then. It was coming up on 3:30. And then, so I ran home. And then today, they were supposed to be here between 9:30 and 10. They didn't come and didn't come and didn't come and didn't come. And early afternoon, Nigel asked if they had been here. I said, nope. And so he contacted them, and he said he swears he'll be here this afternoon. And then he rang me at least 2 times on the way to get directions, because the address they'd been given was wrong. They misspelled our street name. That meant it wasn't showing up in GPS. And they finally showed up about 2:30 this afternoon and fixed it within 20 to 30 minutes. And so we finally, after 4 months, have a working dryer, and I'm so happy. But one of the other things I was doing yesterday is that Nigel and I went off to see the new Star Wars movie, and I'm not going to tell you anything about it because I don't do spoilers, but we did enjoy it, I will tell you that much. And I've blogged about that too. If I remember, I'll put a link to the show notes. No spoilers in the blog either. And so we've had a very busy time since I last recorded, both nationally and personally. And I don't know if I'm going to get another chance to podcast before Christmas. I'm going to try, but I can't promise anything. And then the next time after that won't be until like January 11th or something like that. So don't be surprised that there is nothing around Christmas, New Year's, and so on until January 11th. But there will be a couple of two political podcasts between now and then. I know, because I'm in charge of that. But that is it for today and this week. And if I don't have a chance to podcast before, have a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. But as I said, I'm going to try to do one more before the holidays. But that's it for right now. Talk to you soon. Bye.
You can comment on this or any episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amrens, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.